This is Greater LA, the show that usually connects you to the people and places of Southern California.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same?
But today we're branching out a bit. That's former California Senator Kamala Harris swearing in new additions to Congress's upper chamber, including her own replacement, former California Secretary of State Alex Padilla.
I do.
Congratulations.
He is California's first Latino senator in a state that's 40% Latino. He gets to serve the last 2 years of Vice President Harris's term before facing re-election next year in 2022. And Senator Padilla now joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show.
From Pacoima to Washington, how's it feel to be in the upper chamber over there?
Oh, my gosh. It's been quite the journey, a lot to take in. You know, transitioning into United States Senate is kind of a big enough deal on its own. But, you know, the circumstances we're living in have made the work not just that much more important, but that much more urgent, you know, starting with improving the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and so much more. So a lot to take in. It's an honor of a lifetime, but we're fired up and ready to work.
Let's talk about COVID relief, because I know this is a big deal for you guys. A lot of folks here in Southern California have had their health and finances affected by this pandemic. President Biden wants a really big relief package, $1.9 trillion. A group of Republicans has countered with a much cheaper package, $600 billion or so. It looks like Congress may use what's called budget reconciliation to pass the bigger package without Republican support. Do you think that's the right way to go without being bipartisan, or is there a way forward bringing in the Republicans as well?
Look, I think the door is wide open for Republicans to join Democrats on acting urgently to provide much needed relief for families that are struggling in California and across the country, small businesses that have been struggling to keep their doors open, you know, providing the resources necessary for, you know, healthcare facilities and state and local governments, school districts, et cetera. And I think ultimately that's what Americans want and deserve. Big action, fast. And so I don't want to get caught up in the procedural inner workings of the United States Senate. You know, I'm here because the situation is absolutely desperate. You know, in California, Southern California especially, has been the epicenter of the epicenter in recent weeks. I know my hometown of Pacoima in the Northeast San Fernando Valley is one of the biggest red spots on the map. You know, more cases each day, people dying each day. That's what drives the urgency with which we need to act. And, you know, it's been now more than a month since the last relief package was adopted. The end of the pandemic is still not in sight. And so we need to continue to invest in, you know, a better vaccine distribution plan. We need to invest in schools and state and local governments, but provide much needed direct assistance to families who are either maybe facing evictions or not knowing where the next meal's coming from.
I got to ask you, I mean, you know, as far as the filibuster goes, which is, you know, cloture, you have to get to 60 to get anything done in the Senate. Democrats are talking about getting rid of the filibuster. You're now on the rules panel in the Senate. There's a lot of talk with doing away with it. Do you support that move?
Look, I support the move because I've seen the filibuster serve to obstruct a lot of progress, especially during the 8 years of the Obama administration. Looking at the urgency and the desperation of the times we're living in, both from a health perspective and an economic perspective, I'm not in the mood for obstruction. I'm in the mood for acting quickly and acting boldly to help people that are struggling. You know, there's multiple ways to get this done. You know, the traditional route, as you mentioned, could be 60 votes. This route, which just requires the bare minimum of 51, the door is wide open for this to be on a bipartisan basis, but it's up to Republicans to decide if this is going to be bipartisan or not. Democrats are ready to act. The American people need action fast, and that's what we're prepared to deliver.
What happens when or if the Democrats are in the minority? You're right. No obstruction. Then you guys have no power in the minority, right?
Right. And, you know, someday that may happen. But for now, we're living in unprecedented times. This COVID-19 pandemic is a once in a century type of event, not just for our country, but for people around the world. And so we need bold action fast. And, you know, we'll deal with the future when we get there.
You know what a big topic immigration is in Southern California, for sure. We've been hearing for years about the need for comprehensive federal immigration reform. But more specifically, what do you see as a road forward on this issue? I know the president, he signed some executive orders reversing some of his predecessors. Executive orders and moves during the Trump presidency.
Right. President Biden's executive orders reversing some of the most cruel policies of the Trump administration is a good start. But comprehensive immigration reform done legislatively is long overdue. May not be easy. Once again, it's going to be up to Republicans to decide whether we can do something on a bipartisan basis or not. But I'm hopeful. It wasn't that long ago in 2013 when a bipartisan package was approved by the United States Senate. I know the political environment we're all living in has certainly changed in the last 7 years, but it does provide me hope that it can and should be done on a bipartisan basis sooner rather than later.
Will you be putting forward any specific bill or bills? You know the issue very well. I mean, what would you like to see happen, and how would you like to see it done? And again, you've got to work with Republicans, and you also have to deal with moderate or even more conservative Democrats like Joe Manchin.
Right. And look, the initial proposals come from the White House is a great start. It does cover a lot of pieces. We do need to look at a pathway to citizenship for the millions of immigrants that, in my mind, have clearly earned it. And I'll give you one example that I'm particularly looking out for. I can't tell you how many tweets, how many, you know, Facebook posts I've seen praising essential workers during this pandemic. Workers in the fields working as farm workers, workers in the food industry, workers in the healthcare industry. Many of these are immigrants, and many of them maybe undocumented immigrants, but my God, if they've helped us weather this pandemic, they deserve not just protections in the workplace, but a pathway to citizenship for their heroism and their patriotism. And I'll tell you, no state has more at stake in the outcome and getting this reform passed than the state of California. It's not just the most populous state in the nation, or the most diverse state in the nation, home to more immigrants than any other state in the nation. And look at you know, the Southern California economy, the state's economy, the largest economy of any state in the nation, wouldn't be what it is without the contribution and labor of immigrants.
Final question, sir. What do you think needs to be done? This is such a polarized country. You're either with us or you're against us, enemies of the people, things like that. What do you do to bring people together in such a polarized atmosphere? An atmosphere, by the way, that you saw in person at the United States Capitol just several weeks ago in that insurrection.
You know, there's a lot that we may disagree on when we talk about reaching out across the aisle, but there's ways, if we're willing to put the time and the effort into building relationships in terms of finding common ground. And I think that's still critically important, maybe even more important now than ever. But another new challenge to finding that unity is our fundamental belief in truth. And what is true? What is fact and what is not? The devastating impact of disinformation, we saw it in the election. We're being challenged by it when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic and misinformation on social media and elsewhere that's discouraging people from getting the vaccine when it's available to them. We have to start by getting people of all political stripes agreeing to, you know, let's acknowledge the truth here, let's acknowledge the facts, and try to make progress on policy and finding common ground based on that.
Senator Alex Padilla, from humble beginnings in Pacoima to the world's greatest deliberative body. Senator, congratulations, and again, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Be back soon.
In Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. That's the sound of a forklift in the warehouse of Homeboy Electronics Recycling, just south of downtown LA. It's loaded up with boxes filled with old printers, part of a vast haul of e-waste that arrives here every day. Churam Cam, who goes by X-Cam, is operations manager.
We find, well, stuff that I deem personally like still very valuable that companies are just getting rid of. Like stuff that can go to our resale department and actually make a, I would say like give it a purpose again, repurpose it.
California is one of 25 states in the U.S. that requires the recycling and recovery of e-waste. You even pay a tax every time you buy new electronics to cover the cost of recycling that piece of equipment. It used to be that much of our e-waste was shipped overseas. But since China and other countries stopped accepting much of that solid waste for recycling a couple of years ago, now it's piling up here in the Golden State. So this LA social enterprise is trying to make a dent in that problem while giving people new purpose as well.
We kind of like relate with giving people second chance, the same thing like giving electronics a second chance, right? That's what we like to do.
As part of our series, Wasted, Neat Solutions to the Dirty Problem of Waste, KCRW's Francis Anderton and Kaylee Wells take you into this warehouse full of second chances.
Homeboy Electronics Recycling sits on a street filled with tents, graffiti, and a Baptist church. Trucks are coming and going outside.
And inside are aisles of shelves, floor to ceiling, piled high with cardboard boxes. Workers, mostly young men, in dark green Homeboy t-shirts and masks, drive forklifts, stacking stuff. Brian Fox, director of reuse, gives a tour.
We're standing at the dock here, where we intake everything, so we go around the city.
Brian says that people drop off electronics here, or Homeboy goes and picks them up from hospitals, banks, movie studios, and small businesses.
And we weigh it. It's part of the California state requirements for recycling. So we have a mass balance report at the end of every year so we can prove that we're not thrown in the LA River.
The goal at Homeboy Recycling is to refurbish and reuse as much as they can. It starts with inventorying the electronics.
And any of the good stuff we're going to set aside, laptops, desktops, audio video equipment, and then all the stuff that maybe is too old, no longer usable, we're going to sort into a bunch of different scrap bins or to next step processes. If it's like a Pentium 4 or old, you know, we're going to demanufacture that. It's kind of the inverse of manufacturing. It's demanufacturing.
A young man named Jerry Garcia is ripping apart a Dell computer. Garcia has long, wavy locks, a bit like his namesake in The Grateful Dead, and he is a one-man wrecking crew.
With gloved hands, he pulls out cords, unscrews parts, yanks out the motherboard. Within minutes, the machine is in pieces.
Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, I wish it was a little quicker, but...
Wow, so Jerry, do you get a kick out of this?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy it.
It seems like it might be quite fun taking this stuff apart.
It is. It gets your brain working. Then sometimes I wonder if I could put everything back.
Jerry Garcia came to Homeboy Recycling 18 months ago. Before that, he worked in a mountain conservancy program.
So he's gone from being deep in nature to being deep in e-waste.
Now that I think about it, I'm helping nature by getting rid of this, you know, by reducing it. So it's kind of cool.
Then materials and components are separated. Let's go back to Brian Fox.
And then we have our circuit boards left over. We have our floppy disk drives. We have our fans, aluminum heatsink. And those are all going to get separated into the processor, RAM, you know, and those will get sold as just that item, as just scrap.
Newer computers get refurbished and resold.
Yeah, but only once their data has been fully scrubbed.
So our data rooms where we have these wiping machines and a hard drive repairing machine even that actually repairs old hard drives. And we use that to get the information erased, like, very securely. It writes random ones and zeros over the entire hard drive. We are able to then reuse that hard drive. It's been refurbished. It should have a long life left in it.
And this refurbished computer will move on to a secondary market, typically overseas, where someone will be just fine with a used one.
But what's really cool about Homeboy Electronics Recycling is they have another goal as well.
That's right. This is the for-profit branch of Homeboy Industries. And Homeboy Industries is the non-profit that offers formerly gang-involved and incarcerated people training and skills, ranging from screen printing to cooking. Here's Lulu Cornspan. She's the Director of Administration at Homeboy Recycling.
I love the idea and manifestation of giving people a second chance and giving these electronics and these precious metals a second chance instead of discarding these items and these people from our society and thinking we never have to think about it again.
XCAM, the operations manager, got his second chance at Homeboy Electronics Recycling. We talked about it upstairs in a quiet office.
I did a lot of time in prison when I first came home. They gave me a chance. I was hired, I believe, part-time just to begin with. And I started what we did then, demanufacturing. So I was taking apart computers. I was 15 when I first got incarcerated. But going through the juvenile system, like, let's say, juvenile hall or California Youth Authority, I made it to prison at the age of 17. People make mistakes. Obviously, like, after we serve our time, we would love a chance to be treated like normal again, instead of being like forced or feel forced to be pushed back in the way.
So with every box of e-waste that comes in, Homeboy Recycling is having a social impact as well, says Lulu.
We've quantified that for every 100,000 pounds of electronics we recycle, we can create a new job. So recycling more creates more jobs. And I think there's, you know, so much opportunity there.
There is so much opportunity because there is so much e-waste.
Brian says Homeboy alone is processing, on average, 30 to 40,000 pounds per week.
E-waste in general is the fastest growing waste stream in the world.
Let's hear from Anna Pacheco. She's a quality assurance manager at Homeboy Electronics Recycling.
Electronics are being created and manufactured constantly, all the time. There's always a new gadget to get, so every single person has either a junk drawer or a closet full of electronics that they don't need anymore.
And don't expect that stream to dwindle anytime soon.
Exactly. Today, we're talking about computers and printers and VCRs, but there's soon going to be a huge number of electric cars and solar panels that have reached the end of their life, meaning toxic lithium ion batteries and photovoltaic cells that will have to be gotten rid of somehow.
And this gets right back to a theme that we have been exploring this entire series, the notion that there is no such place as away. Let's give the last word to operations manager XCAM.
Be aware of what you're buying. Educate yourself a little, like, is it easy to fix? Make sure these stuff don't end up in the trash, end up in a landfill, because they're definitely not biodegradable. And all we're going to be doing with all the amount of electronics that we use is just going to fill up our landfill, poison the land, and it's just going to really do major, major damage to the world.
For KCRW, I'm Frances Anderton.
And I'm Kaylee Wells. Next week, we will look at a preventative solution to construction and demolition waste. Welcome to the wonderful world of 3D printed buildings.
From reusing electronics to reusing found items or thrift store finds, that's a key part of the work from South African artist Simpiwe Nzube. He now lives and works here in Los Angeles. He has a new show opening next week. It's been a busy past few years for Nzube, and the pandemic doesn't seem to have slowed him down. Here to preview that new show is our art insider, Lindsay Preston-Zappas, editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review, Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
The new show is titled, Like the Snake That Fed the Chameleon. What does that mean?
Yes, isn't that a great title? Yeah. So Simpue is always using these really fantastical titles where they almost sound like fables. For instance, a past show of his was called In the Order of Elephants After the Rain, which kind of just drops you into the middle of a narrative. So in the press release for his new show that's opening at Nicodeme Gallery here in LA, they write that, like the snake, Simpue's characters can be cold-blooded and stealthy, but then like the chameleon, they're capable of change. So it's really, you know, thinking about the sort of symbolic aspects of both of those animals. And I talked to Simpue about change and metamorphosis and kind of imbuing the show with those ideas. And I think a lot of ideas that undergird Simpue's work, is, although it's really fantastical and playful, it's also thinking about trauma and kind of using fantasy as a way to uplift his characters out of their struggle.
His pieces, Lindsay, usually have a lot going on. I mean, and I, you know, they're very colorful. There are things happening that I don't even know for sure what's happening. They're part painting, they're part sculpture. I see mounds of dirt, I guess, or sand, part found objects. I mean, they have, it almost looks like this Dr. Seuss vibe, right? Or maybe Salvador Dali or Frida Kahlo. I mean, describe his work.
Wow, those touch points are so interesting, Steve. And I feel like you touched on something there. The colors are super keyed up and like very specific. So there's a lot of lime green and this kind of lavender magenta. And he works across all different mediums. So it's almost like the characters in his work can travel between paintings and then come to life off the canvas, like they're dancing through the gallery. Sometimes they literally do come off the canvas, where he'll put shirts or pants onto his paintings so the figures are able to kind of dangle off the edge of the painting. But he also really loves shopping at thrift stores and, or, you know, in the fashion district, or pulling things off the street and kind of finding objects that have a past history of use. And that's something that's really intriguing to him, kind of like the residue or stories of other people. His practice is really also aligned with the literary genre of magical realism. So if you think about the book like The Alchemist or 100 Years of Solitude or those kinds of stories where they're rooted in reality, but then also totally able to be fantastical and mystical.
You talked to him on your Carla podcast, and he told you about this, that he lets the inspiration or the work itself sort of lead him in that direction, right?
Yes, exactly. It was so beautiful to hear him talk about it. He told me that he tries to get into the mind of a child. So almost like this dreamlike state. Like, you know how when you're dreaming, you're kind of pulling bits from your life, but then it also gets jumbled into this new fantasy.
The work is so much based on the openness. I do not judge my work. I bring to it what comes naturally, and I allow it, as the finish goes, to be whatever it wants to be.
He is originally from South Africa, but he now lives in Los Angeles. Do you think that maybe being an Angeleno has affected his work?
Totally. Yeah, it's really interesting. So in the conversation on the podcast, I talked to Simpue a lot about artists who kind of mine their traumas in their work, or also instances when people expect artists of color to make work about their trauma or about something that's overtly political. And he described that when he was in South Africa and making art there, he really almost felt pigeonholed into that. But then coming here, he's able to sort of hold his memories and experiences at a distance. He literally described it to me as like this clean slate of kind of being freed from some of those expectations. So I feel like moving to LA has really allowed him to kind of indulge in this fantasy space where, again, his characters are loosely rooted in South Africa, but they're really able to journey out in ways that they may not be able to do in reality. So there's a lot of hope and healing, I think, that has come into his work.
By the way, this is a town of fantasy, right? I mean, that's what we see. It's what LA is based on. So when can you go see the new show at Nicodeme?
Yeah, I'm so excited to see it myself. I've only seen glimpses, but the gallery is downtown near the Arts District, and the show opens on February 13th. Per usual, appointments, masks, all of that are required, so you can call the gallery or check out their website. And there's actually a handful of other galleries in the same building, so be sure if you go to check those other galleries out too.
All right. Lindsay Preston-Zappas, our art insider, editor-in-chief of Carla. You can listen, by the way, to Lindsay's full hour-long conversation with Simpiwei on the Carla podcast coming out tomorrow. And you can find that wherever you get your podcast. Lindsay, as always, thanks.
Thanks so much.
That's it for us today. Next week, an old roller rink will become a homeless shelter in the San Fernando Valley, where there's been a big fight about it for years. Our Wasted series continues with a look at ways to make cheaper buildings with 3D printers. And Valentine's Day, just around the corner. Dating among people and mating among other creatures. All yours next week. Grace us with your presence at kcrw.com/greaterLA. You're not going to regret it. Everything's archived there. You can subscribe to the show, too. kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geist, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show this evening. Thank you for your ears tonight. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great night.